Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? I'm so glad that you're here. Today on the show, I talked to Toby Sovak, and Toby is one of the co-owners of Noisette, a pastry shop in Eugene, Oregon, and a pretty darn fine one, according to a lot of people who were saying, you need to get the folks from Noisette on the podcast. So I'm excited to bring that chat to you in a few minutes. Until then, hope you're doing well. If you were in the States, you just got off a long weekend there. How was that? Hope you had fun. I believe this is the traditional weekend of barbecuing and auto racing. And so I hope you got to barbecue a little, hope you got to auto race a little, or I don't know, or go out on a boat or swim or do something fun in the outdoors. There you go. So before we talk to Toby, I've got two stories to share. And one is kind of happy and goofy, and one's awfully sad. And so I'm not sure the order to do this. I think let's do the sad one first. If you're in Canada, you've heard on the news, no doubt, of the residential school discovery in Kamloops over the weekend, where I'm going to explain this to folks from around the world. But in Canada, over a very long period, but it kind of peaked in the 1960s. They called it the 60s scoop. Between the church and the government, they opened up a series of schools around the country for Indigenous children. And these were not voluntary. They actually went into communities and took the kids, Indigenous kids, out of the communities and put them in the schools to educate them in the European style, with the stated purpose of removing their culture, put it that way, of denying these kids their own culture and language, with the misguided notion, and in modern lens, the very cruel notion that if you removed Indigenous culture, it would be better for the kids because they would more assimilate into the white person's culture, right? And to look back on it now, you'd say, well, that's a shockingly horrible idea. But it happened. And it's something that in Canada we're still coming to terms with, that it happened. And it happened for a very, very long time. Like the last residential school was in Punishai, Saskatchewan, and it closed in 1996. So it was long-term, it was widespread, and it was relatively recent. And it was horrible. And there are people, there are generations of people still recovering from the 60s scoop. And in Canada, we had a thing called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to come up with recommendations about how do we have some sort of reconciliation with Indigenous communities about what happened, and how do we share the truth of what happened about how, you know, we were trying to, you know, systematically destroy their culture. And the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, it has been barely made a ripple in the political discussion here. Folks that want to know about it. There's information available. I encourage all Canadians and everybody really to dig into it. But, you know, it is painfully easy to ignore it. And then this past weekend, they were doing some deep radar searching at a former residential school site in Kamloops, BC, and found the graves of 215 kids, some as young as age three, that had died and were buried at the school, and, you know, parents weren't notified and that kind of thing. And so these parents that have had their kids taken away never knew what happened to their kids. And, you know, there's much suspicion or much belief that this is not an isolated case. And there's calls now to do more searches on more residential school sites to see if they can find more kids, more bodies, and try and, you know, connect them up, recognize what happened and connect them up with their families and you know, do right by these kids and these families. And so, you know, there was there's vigils going on across the country. And why am I mentioning this on the show? Because I just want to acknowledge it, and I want to acknowledge what happened in Canada. I want to acknowledge the folks that are trying to work towards reconciliation in Canada. And, you know, just as a parent and as a human being, I just want to reach out emotionally to the folks that have been affected by this and were affected by this over decades across all the entire breadth of your family. And just to say, I see you. I was alive when this was going on. I grew up when this was happening. Did not know that this was happening until my daughter, Robin, was in university taking education and was learning about all of this stuff, because nobody talked about what was going on when I was a kid and a young adult. And so it took the next generation to teach me what was happening under my own nose. But I just want to say to Canadian folks, to Indigenous folks around the world, if you're listening to this show, if you are an Indigenous person and you are a baker and you are getting into this podcast, I just want you to know that I see you, that I'm deeply sorry for what has happened and for the continued disadvantages that you face. We talk a lot on the show about inclusion here and about social justice here in a lot of different contexts, because a lot of the bakers that I talk to on this show are deeply involved in social justice issues alongside and in complement to the baking that they do and the service that they do. And I'm so happy that I get to use this platform to shine a light on the work that they do and to amplify what they do. And so this is kind of like that. I'm sharing this with you kind of like that. I feel terrible. This has messed me up all weekend from the perspective of, like, I just can't believe what happened here. And I shouldn't be surprised. And yet I'm still shocked by it. And there was a vigil just across the street from where we live in Victoria that we went to last night, where Indigenous and non-Indigenous people by the hundreds got together for songs and for prayers and for candle lightings and just to be together to think about these kids and what happened to them and the families that were affected, and to make some commitments to the kids today, to what they called the eighth generation, and make commitments to protect those kids and to somehow move forward from this. So there you go. So if you're listening to this and you've been affected by this in any way, in your life and in your family, I just want to just hold some space for you and to let you know that you're in my thoughts, and I know that you're in the thoughts of bakers around the world that are trying to, through their work and through their craft, make the world a better place for everybody. My funny story seems kind of pointless after that, so I'm going to save it for next week, because it's not really that funny, and it's more goofy than funny. Alrighty. Now, Toby Sovak, here's the thing. I've had folks, friends, bakers, non-bakers, reach out to me and say, you need to talk to the folks at Noisette in Eugene because they've got an amazing place. Their food is amazing. The pastries are amazing. It's a real hub in the community. And so, you know, Mark, you need to get them on the show. And so I reached out and got a hold of them and said, yeah, for sure, they'll talk. And we got on the phone, got on the Zoom with Toby and had a really good chat. I'm going to tell you right now, it was a challenging one tech-wise. We didn't have the best connection. Toby broke away from a very busy day, a day where her oven had just broken down and she was waiting for the guys to come and fix it. She was taking deliveries of fresh cut flowers for a CSA. There was lots of hustle and bustle, which is good, but the hustle and bustle was affecting the Wi-Fi, which was not as good. So there are bits in the call, especially in the first 10 minutes of the conversation, that are a little wonky, but stick with it. It's a really good chat, and it's a very interesting chat. And Toby's a very interesting person. Her and her husband started Noisette 8 years ago, and it's changed a lot, especially over the last year with COVID. We talk about the beginnings. We talk about the middle. We talk about the current day and the future. It's a really good chat. So here we go. Toby Sovak, Noisette in Eugene, Oregon. Let's go. Are you in the kitchen at the bakery today?
I'm at Noisette. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little hectic today.
Oh yeah.
It's fine. That's fine. I try to sequester myself a little bit. Every day is pretty hectic. Today is the first day of this season. We work with a flower farmer, and she has a flower CSA, and we're her drop site. She's over here today. People are coming to pick up their flowers from her. So we're a drop site for a couple, and three farms, one flower farm and two produce farms. So people days of the week, Tuesday through Friday, which is super awesome.
Cool. Cool. So it's good to hear, I guess, that if you're able to work as a drop site and stuff, must mean that things are opening up a little bit more for you with the COVID stuff, or what's the situation in Oregon?
Actually, in the last couple of weeks, but we've been going strong the whole year. Actually,
good.
Yeah, our business is mostly grab and go,
mm-hmm.
or that's the way we intended it to be when we started 8 years ago. But all of our friends were like, no, you have to have tables and chairs and china and flatware and glassware. And, you know, it just turned into this bustling cafe. But really, the original intent was everything's grab and go. Like European train station was our model.
Oh, really? That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So once COVID hit, we were like, yes, we're back to our original idea. So we've been fine without. And in fact, I kind of, when our flower farmer, when her flower season ended last year, like in the fall, I just filled the room with plants, like house plants. So we have lots of plants instead of people. And we transitioned part of the dining room into a little like setup station for special orders and cakes and things like wedding cakes. And sometimes we do these like special orders, or we don't really like these like highly decorated things. So I transitioned part of the dining room into a station where we could, you know, spread out and it's not flower filled. Most of the kitchen, the bakery is, you know, flour palace, gluten
yeah.
palace.
Yeah.
Palace.
Yeah. You need a clean place to work to do that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. To do that. And the kitchen gets real crowded. So I'm sitting in the dining room right now, and with the plants, and we just finished a big cookie order. Packing it up. Everybody else is in the kitchen baking things, waiting for our oven guy to come and look at an oven. You know, the usual.
Oh, dear. But yeah.
It's not Friday at 5 p.m. when, you know, an oven goes down.
That's exactly.
And then they're like, well, I can come if you want to pay overtime.
Yeah.
So we're waiting for an oven guy right now. But what was I going to say? Yeah. So with COVID, we've been just, we were able to just, we already had an online, and of course there was an uptick in orders, and we had just started like third party delivery. So we just increased that and added on another third party delivery platform. Do you have that, all that in where you are?
Yeah. Up here it's
the third party.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Skip the Dishes and, DoorDash and a couple others. Yeah. Although I tend to walk around and just get takeout, but
we have three.
Hey, so I'm really curious then where did the idea to be like a European train station come up? Tell me that story. It sounds amazing.
I don't think it's that exciting of a story really, but, my husband is a chef. And I am a pastry chef, and our background is both, for both of us is fine dining. That's how we met. And, and we were working at a very nice place here in Eugene, and it was just time for us to finally do our own thing. And we didn't feel like fine dining was the way to go where we live. It just was too, it was too, high end for the community, and we wanted to do something that we thought would be more successful, honestly, you know, than opening a fine dining restaurant and having to deal with service. So we just said, let's just open a cafe, like a pastry cafe. Right. And we just started with that idea, and we're like, what, we don't really want to have table service. We don't want to have, you know, we want to focus on the food and beverage. We don't want to focus on a fancy, you know, a fancy look with, like, we want the atmosphere to be all about the food.
Right.
So that's how we built it.
Yeah.
We just started small and started with what's the menu going to be. And it's going to be mostly like breakfast pastries and lunch items and sandwiches. And, the pastries are both sweet and savory.
Right.
And I said, well, we're going to be hungry, so we might as well sell sandwiches, which means we're going to make bread.
Right.
And I had a little bit of bread experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, well, so that's where we started, you know, pastries and bread and sandwiches. And my husband does charcuterie. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we always had, like, you know, we made our own bacon, and we make our own ham and smoked trout and cured salmon, and on Sundays we make bagels and have bagels and lox on Sunday. So, you know, we just kind of started that way, and it's just grown from there.
Cool. Oh yeah. Well, and so has the food world, has that been your life then? That's your main, been your career the whole time?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I didn't go to school.
Right.
To culinary school. My husband did. He went to CIA.
Oh, cool.
But I went, and I went to art school.
Yeah.
So I did all kinds of things, you know, and worked in the art world, like on the East Coast in New York.
Right.
And then there was a recession, and I had to do something else. So somebody hired me as a pastry assistant. Mm-hmm. And that was it from there. So I started as a pastry assistant in New York, and then worked in nice restaurants, and then made my way to the West Coast.
Okay.
And
what got you?
And worked in what?
Yeah. What took you out West?
Oh, a friend of mine was like, a friend of mine who grew up in New York. She was like, okay, enough of living in this crappy loft in Brooklyn. And this was like before Brooklyn was what it is
sure,
now.
Sure.
Like, she's like, you just like don't have any time to do anything fun, and you just like work for a living and, you know, work all the time.
Yep.
I mean, I had a lot of fun in living in New York, but she just convinced me, like, just sublet your place and come to San Francisco. You're going to love it. So I did.
Yeah.
And like in the first month I was there, I met my husband.
Oh, okay.
And working in a restaurant, yeah, in a very nice restaurant, San Francisco. And so, you know, I worked at a couple of places there, and then that's how I got from the East to the West. But
right,
we eventually, we lived in LA for a while and had a child, and then we moved to Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
We were in LA for like 10 years, and then we moved to Eugene just for a quieter, slower paced, quieter life and good school system.
Right. Sure. Sure. Well, and Eugene's a university town too, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
So it's been really great. The food system in this area is really incredible.
Yeah.
And the farmers, the markets, the, you know, from the produce to the foraged foods.
Yep.
To,
yep.
You know, all the, everything.
Oh, for sure.
And it's like we hit the jackpot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I had no awareness of the Pacific Northwest for a very long time. And until I remember like about 10, 15 years ago that I was listening to some folks in Seattle, and they were always like, you know, don't tell anybody how awesome the food scene is here, you know, but it's amazing. And now I'm like, I'm just up on Vancouver Island, and yeah, it's just incredible what's available. And, you know, I feel like we're kind of neighbors, you know, like close enough, yes, kind of a thing. And it's, yeah, it's gorgeous out here. And so much,
the
food scene out here is amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's so neat. You know, when I had my retail bakery back in Saskatchewan, I had a young woman come and work for me because she wanted to, we were more of a bread shop and simpler pastries kind of a thing. And, but she, mm-hmm, she wanted to do more bread stuff and said, great. But had worked in, you know, in nice restaurants and hotels and that, in Saskatchewan. And, you know, I think the precision that good pastry chefs have, both precision and creativity, is really awesome to watch, you know, and she's since opened up her own place and is just killing it, you know. With, I have a lot of respect for the types of work that good pastry folk can do, you know. It's amazing to, well, it's amazing to eat. And amazing to see, although I can't do it. I don't have the fine motor skills to do what you do, you know.
It's pretty fun to be able to, you know, use all those experiences.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully, and try to bring them, you know, to something that's a little bit more accessible.
Yeah.
Than a pastry shop like this. You know, we can't do like, you know, I'm always fantasizing about these ideas and I'm like, oh yeah, that would be a great plated dessert. Too bad we don't do that.
Right.
Here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you've got,
you know,
that.
We're trying to think, we always try to incorporate those ideas. Like how could we do something that would hold in a pastry case or, yes, on the pastry counter?
Yes. Yeah. And would stand up to some sort of packaging if folks are taking it, right, out, that kind of a thing. Oh yeah. Yeah. That was even at our bakery, when we tried to up our game a little bit, we realized you're always solving a bit of a packaging conundrum as well. You know, it's not,
yeah, sure,
like the most beautiful loaf of bread. You can just put it in a bag and away you go, you know? Yeah. It's a different thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're always considering that and training the front of house staff to,
yeah,
you know, all the time it took to make these cute little tarts.
Oh yeah.
You need to take care in putting it in the right package.
Yep.
So that the guest gets it home and in good shape.
Exactly. Exactly. And you want, they want that same thrill of that, you know, holding that little bit of perfection in their hand. Right. And just up until they eat it. Yeah. Oh, so cool.
Even with the, you know, the laminated doughs.
Yeah.
You know, we have to teach people like, okay, only 3 or 4 pieces can fit in this size, like bag,
yes,
or box.
Yes.
And, you know, if they're getting more, you put it in this other size,
yep,
you know, like don't squish it.
Oh yeah.
Whatever you do, don't squish it. That took like 5 days to make. Yep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My wife, Cindy, she did all the front of house training. And it was always remarkable to me how much time she would spend on, here's how we bag stuff, here's how we package stuff, and, you know, but it was 100% essential, you know, had to be done. And it was just quite simply, okay, here's how we do it here. And it didn't matter if it was a, you know, some croissants or a 6-pack of soft buns. You're not going to squish them. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a constant.
Yeah.
And even the simplest things, like, you know, cleaning the pastry counter,
yep,
consolidating, changing the plates.
Yeah.
You know, as we sell items, you yep know, change the plate to a smaller size so it doesn't look like it's swimming in space with yeah crumbs all around it.
Yep.
You know, yep, all of those are concerns that, you know, people aren't used to looking for them.
Yeah.
Until they start to see it.
Yeah. Cause like nobody wants to buy the last one on a plate, you know, you got to make it look full.
Really fortunate that we've been able to operate and we downsized the staff a little bit.
Okay.
At the beginning. And then in the last few months to scale back up. Because we are busy,
yeah,
and especially now. We also do some wedding cakes.
Yeah.
So now that the season is upon us, it's like all the 2020 weddings plus the 2021 weddings.
Yeah.
Like everybody wants wedding cakes, and they're having larger parties, which is a little bit scary for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not so excited about that, but
I hear you. Yeah. I meant to ask you about that, about whether last year, if folks just went smaller, or were there a lot of postponements to this year from a wedding
perspective? There were, a lot of cancellations, a lot of postponements to this year.
Yeah.
But we did end up getting a lot of really sweet small weddings.
Oh, cool.
And we loved it.
Yeah.
Like our flower farmer supplied us with gorgeous flowers all season long. And we just made these beautiful small cakes that were just like full of natural blooms. And it was just, they were so great.
Yeah.
So much fun for us. Oh. So like in the height of, you know, this like fear of the pandemic and COVID and what does that mean, and trying to keep us all safe and keep our business afloat, we were making these beautiful, beautiful cakes for people. And it was really, you know, a weird dichotomy of like trying to stay safe and keep people distanced, but also trying to like maintain some kind of creative output and keep ourselves engaged and try to have fun through it. And, you know,
yeah,
I think we kind of did it.
No, so cool. Yeah. Well, and I would imagine that even if things have slowed down a bit, or maybe the cake orders are a little smaller, you get to focus in more on the look and having fun and that kind of thing, which probably made itself known through the work, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And people were super kind and like gracious and grateful. Like they're happy to have a cake.
Yeah.
And so many people picked up their cakes and were like, oh my God, I wasn't expecting this.
Ah,
it's
so
just
nice.
Gorgeous.
So nice.
It was
to hear.
So rewarding. Yeah. For all of us.
Yeah.
Putting the cakes together and like, our flower farmer, she was just, I would say like, okay, these are the colors they want. And she'd be like, okay, I have this and this and that. And she'd just bring us boxes of flowers. And it was so great.
Yeah. Oh, well, then
it's weird to reminisce about that,
yeah,
you know, like to reminisce about the crap of last
yeah
year.
Yeah. No kidding. And, no kidding. But well, you find
some of it.
You find the joy where you can, I guess, you know?
Yeah. There's a little silver lining.
Yeah. Well, and I was looking at the cakes on your website, and they're absolutely stunning. Like, I love the, they look so nice. You know, after we closed our bakery, my wife worked for a couple of years at a coffee shop in Saskatchewan with, where it was owned by two sisters, and one of the sisters is a very, very good cake decorator. And in the style of what I imagine you do, based on the website and stuff, it's like, you know, simple and with, you know, fresh flowers and that kind of thing on it, and very, very elegant. And I'm just always blown away by that, right? Like, it's, you know, as opposed to, you know, when we got married in the 90s and sort of what was normal for wedding cakes back then, I really like the current, like the aesthetic that you have with this. I'd have a redo and get one of your cakes for sure. New cake.
Not, renew not, your vows.
Yeah, not new spouse. The new cake.
Let's just new cake. Right.
So, yeah, new cake. But oh yeah, no, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
Yeah. So with having done this for 8 years now, and I'm curious how the sort of how the community's responded. How are the folks in Eugene kind of supporting what you're doing?
Well, we had support from the very beginning, and that's been so rewarding for us. And a lot of people knew us because of the places where we were working.
Right.
So right out of the gate, like, we had a little bit of a following, and then, you know, it was a slow start, but it's been so great. And like, people now are like, when are you going to reopen? I'm like, they're open. And, you know, they mean like, when are you going to put the tables and chairs out so
right.
you can sit?
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't really want to burst their bubble, but not really thinking about doing that.
Yeah.
We're just taking our time with, you know, with that. And, but like I said before, like, we're busy. We're super busy. So if we can just maintain for a while without people dining in, we're just going to keep that going.
Yeah.
We did have, before pre-pandemic, we did some wholesale.
Okay.
To like cafes. So we did some wholesale. We did some bread wholesale for our restaurant friends. And we also did some catering, not really going on site, but just like platters you could pick up or we would deliver. But so, you know, I called it wholesale light and catering light. And then once the pandemic hit, all of that went away immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And now people are starting. I mean, we have a couple of wholesale accounts, like other cafes that have been open, just like we are. And, you know, their friends or coffee roasters have cafes. And so, like, yeah, of course, we'll make pastries or bread for you.
Right.
We've been trying to, like, we have hardly any wholesale now. And we're definitely not doing catering.
Okay.
And just doing the retail has been fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'd imagine it's a bit of, you know, if we change, wait as long as you can to change back, because you don't want to have to change a third time, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and maybe there's something to be said for, like, not, like, everyone talks about going back to normal, and it's like, I'm kind of okay with the new normal.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hear you. That's come up in a lot of conversations I've had with folks where, you know, the changes that they made, if, you know, there's a few things that they miss about the old way, but they got rid of a lot of stuff that was causing them stress anyways, you know. It was just like, I have a friend in Minnesota that's like that, where he's like, okay, if I reopen the front, you know, for walk-in, how do we do it in a way that's better for us? you know, because it wasn't so great before, maybe, you know, or there were things I didn't like before. How do we reopen and not reintroduce all that stuff that I never liked anyways, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And once we closed down, once I looked at the numbers, mm-hmm. I really saw how much money we spent on cleaning up after others.
Oh yeah, sure. Sure.
I mean, that was like 2 extra staff per day minimum. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And now it's like I am able to pay the pastry people, the bread and the pastry crew, more money.
Right.
You know, everybody on the bench has gotten more money, and we don't have to have, and the tips have been great for front of house.
Yeah.
And we don't have to, spend our resources cleaning up after others. Instead, we spend it making nice food.
Sure. Sure. So, oh yeah.
Surprising, actually.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. You know, maybe not when you're in the middle of it, but when you get to take a step back and say, okay, you know, how were things flowing before? That is a big difference,
And especially, and the wholesale, especially, just all the work to administrate the wholesale.
Right. Yeah.
It was so much for us.
Yep.
Because we're a pretty small operation, and and we're so grateful to have awesome wholesale customers, but it really took a lot of work to facilitate it. And we did deliver, we would deliver the wholesale, of course.
Yep.
And it's just like a lot.
Yeah.
And it's just not worth it, I don't think, if we can just sell it all out of our shop.
Yeah. Well, and it's like if it's a significant part of your business, then it makes sense in coming up with the systems and all of that stuff, because it's driving something substantial. But if it's like a small add-on, then it can be a real pain to just get it. Yeah, I can see that for sure, because you want to tune everything, set everything up and get everything well-tuned for your own shop. You know, so if it doesn't complement, you're in trouble. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, and it's a leap from the, magnets on the fridge for your orders to then scale it up and do something bigger, you know.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. Well, and so how many people do you have like in the back doing all the baking work?
I have 2 bread bakers.
Yeah.
One's full time, one's part time. And I think I have 5 pastry chefs.
Cool. Oh, that's
right. And then I've stepped back quite a bit. Like, mm-hmm. I just basically run the business now.
Gotcha.
And try to drive sales.
Okay.
Like, I'll take care of wedding cake orders. And so I just do a really small amount of stuff in the kitchen.
Right.
These days. So I have all of the pastry people take care of everything.
Nice. So, nice. Yeah.
And we do a lot, from breakfast pastries to breads and cookies and tarts and cakes and a lot of savory things, and then there are 2 savory staff that do all the veg prep, all the charcuterie work,
right on,
and take care of sandwiches and soups and
right on
all of that sort of thing.
Oh yeah,
but they do all the veg prep for the pastry gals.
Okay. Yep. Sure. That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. Well, has it been a nice transition for you to be able to say, okay, now I can take I can focus on making the business go?
In some ways, like, I needed to step back because I physically can't do those 12-hour days on my feet.
Sure. Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm still here, like, a 10-hour day is normal, but I might not be on my feet the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. For sure.
I'm just facilitating everybody else to be on their feet.
Yeah.
But I'm really trying to figure out a way to make the bakery more sustainable, and make the, restaurant work is grueling. And I want it to be good for all of my employees. I want people to love what they do.
Right.
And you know, enjoy the creative part and make some money while they do it. But that,
yeah, make a living. Yeah.
The system is really, the system I grew up in is not the best.
Yeah.
So whatever we can do to, you know, to change that for the better and have a sustainable working environment and, you know, in this kind of a venue.
Yeah.
We just are doing our best to make that happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, cause you'd, I'm assuming you'd like for your staff to say, I can make a career out of this, as opposed to, you know, this is what I do until I go do something else, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And pretty much everybody on the bench is, you know, career bread or pastry.
Oh, great.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
but you know, they're young. I want them to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Until they have their own place.
Exactly. Or
whatever their vision is.
Yep.
You know, for their future.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
I don't want their bodies to break down.
Yep. Yep. For sure.
The way it does.
For sure. Or, you know, do this. This is what you can do till you're like, you know, 25. But if you're doing it when you're pushing 30, oh my gosh, right? I should be doing something else. It's like, that's no good. Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I guess now with being established and with doing the quality of the work that you're doing, I'm assuming you'd be a fairly attractive place to work. Like, is staffing a challenge for you still, or are you doing all right in that respect?
This is a good week. You know, everybody's having the same problems, right?
Yeah.
Staffing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a pretty small operation. The front of house, I only have 6 people on front of house staff.
Okay.
And we are open 7 days a week.
Oh, okay.
But so, you know, I'd say the front of house is the most transient.
Right.
So, and we've been really lucky. We have some really lovely, I mean, everyone that we hire is super lovely.
Sure.
But whether they're going to last for very long or, you know, some people are just getting actually tired of the service industry and they need to take a break.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not easy for sure.
And it's been challenging, you know, this year, like when the pandemic started and our customers were super lovely and everybody's just, you know, grateful that we're here,
right,
and open and able to bake and supply them with bread or sourdough starter for those brave few that wanted to try their own.
Yeah.
And, you know, and pastries and cakes for their celebrations, very small cakes. And that was also awesome. But ever since like, the vaccine, I'd say about when, you know, vaccines, really started to roll out in
right.
the US and people are like, I'm sick of this. And, you know, they're out and about more.
Yeah.
People are getting a little bit more impatient, I would say.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Have other people said this similar things?
Well, not with bakers that I've talked to, but I've seen it in my own experience. Just out and about getting groceries or, you know, I went for a walk today to a deli to pick up some sausage and, you know, I'm seeing more kind of, well, like you said, impatient, you know, kind of frustrated people, you know, like I think at the start here and through the whole year, really the vast, vast majority of folks have been, you know, hey, you know, we're all in this together and let's help each other out and that kind of thing. But that weariness is setting in. You know,
yes, and
I ride the bus a lot and you've got to wear your masks on the bus and, yes. You know, you get one person in wearing it as a chin protector and the tension in the whole place just picks up, you know, cause it's like, you know, 4 months ago you could say, hey, you know, you need to fix that. And it's like, oh, sorry, I forgot. Right. And they're apologizing. Right. And now it's like, they're sort of glaring at you, like, just say something. You're like, oh man, you know, or is it going to happen now? Is this what's going on?
And that's been a challenge in the business.
Oh too. Yeah.
you know, like we have to be the mask police.
Yep. And that's been the, thing I have a lot of empathy for you and for the folks that at every store that's been open through all of this too, because there's so much pressure on the staff to maintain order, you know, and the risks, yeah, and the risks of just letting it slide is you could get shut down, you know? So it's like, lot of pressure.
Well, I wasn't worried about that as much as I was worried about anybody on my staff getting sick.
Oh yeah. Like, oh yeah, for sure.
You know, like we would have to shut down if we got sick.
Yeah. And,
luckily that wasn't an issue for us, but
that's awesome.
You know, we were really trying to work hard at like maintaining safety protocols for everybody. Yeah. And, you know, and we've been lucky. It's been relatively good, but I don't know I know a little bit of how the vaccine rollout's going in Canada.
Yeah.
So I have a relative there, but you know, the vaccine rollout here is strong.
Yeah.
And most of my staff is fully vaccinated.
Oh, nice.
And then, you know, with the new, you know, the CDC in the US has said, you don't have to wear a mask if you're fully vaccinated. So of course we have customers walking in without masks, but it's like, well, we're not it's been hard enough to be the mask police. We're not the vax police.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to we're not asking people if they're vaccinated or not.
Yeah.
So we're not really there yet.
Yeah.
And we're still requiring people to wear masks, and we're all wearing masks in the shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
and
it's a little messy, right?
Sure. Now. Sure. And I've been reading about that a bunch because in Canada, we're not as far along, certainly in second doses. I think in general, less of an issue here of people refusing the vaccine or not wanting it. It's much more about like, okay, let's get it a little quicker, please. And then let's get those second doses going as well. Right. Cause you know, so, you know, most people that I know now have had their first dose, but very, very few have their second. Like that's more for June and July kind of a thing.
Oh yeah.
And so by August, I think we'll be going through the same kind of thing that's happening for you right now, you know, with that sort of limbo of where are we at really? And that kind of thing. Cause like right, you know, right today as we're talking, like there's actual travel restrictions and stuff in my province and in some other provinces in Canada, like, by next Tuesday, they're talking about, okay, we can back off on that. It's been like this for a couple of months now. We can start easing back a bit. And so, so it's sort of like we're on a, it's like when living out on the West Coast and all the East Coast sports seem to be on like at noon, we're about 3 hours off, you know, in this case, we're about 3 months off, you know, we've got so much American news here that people, are responding more to what they see in American news than what they're hearing in Canadian news. So, but all the stories we hear about, okay, it's over, you know? And so, so it's
not time. Over.
No,
you know,
no.
We check the COVID cases in the state and in our county every day. It's
like, oh yeah.
No, we're still in it.
Yep. Yep. And same here. The thing that I've learned in talking to folks is especially kind of earlier last year and sort of halfway through this, that you know, the cost and the confusion around having to kind of shift and go in one direction and then change back and then tacking back and forth has caused some folks an awful lot of stress from a business owner side, right? And so, you know, sticking to your guns for a little bit longer and saying like, hey, this is kind of working. We're going to ride it. You know, we're going to keep it like this for a little bit longer. Seems to, you know, from the folks I've talked to, seems to be the way to go, you know, because you hit the nail on the head. Like I was talking with a fella in Whistler that's, you know, he adjusted things so as that, like he's not open 7 days a week because so many of his staff were living with, you know, had lots of roommates and that kind of thing, just based on where they were, that He was sort of like, I can't overlap my shifts that much because it makes our bubble too big. So we kind of got a core team and said, okay, what can this core team do 8 hours a day, you know, 40 hours a week? Okay, that's as much as we can do till we ride this out. Because if I start adding other shifts, I'm going to raise the risk for everybody.
Yeah.
And same kind of thing. If COVID rips through the kitchen, we're done for a long time. So, you know, got to hold on here. And yeah. And so if you get it, a long way of saying, if you get a system that's working for you and the staff is safe and you're able to do good work, yeah, then you kind of have to stick with that as long as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just see where it takes us and if there's anything new that comes of it, you know,
yeah,
like something new that we haven't thought of yet.
Yeah,
that
for sure.
Could be fun. I mean, it could be good, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, the opportunity to, you know, when you do make the change, it could be quite a bit different in terms of even product line or something. Who knows, right?
Yeah. Well, we really have had to make some changes to the product line because we can't do everything, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, bread sales have definitely increased. So that's been fine. And we've added some things in the bread and some of the pastries, but like some pastry items, we're just like, it's not worth it. You know, it needs a dedicated oven or it's in the oven for too long.
Right.
You know, it's like, let's just cut these items out or, you know, things that are a little bit labor intensive, but maybe we thought maybe wouldn't sell out. Like, we'll just run them as a special.
Yeah.
1 week or half a week. But just, you know, for fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Make it a special occasion when it's back on the menu and then you can take it off.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, neat. It's always something, you know, like, and like you say, it's like a, if everyone's safe and healthy and happy, then your oven's going to go on you. But, you know, hopefully
that's an equipment situation.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Hopefully that's a quick and easy one for you, but,
yeah,
cool. Well, thanks so much for taking the time, Toby. I really, really appreciate talking with you and hearing about the place. And, I have a friend, Heather in Eugene, who is going to be over the moon happy that we had this talk because she's been bigging you up for a long time about, you know, you need to talk to the folks at Noisette because it's her favorite place. And so, yeah. And so,
that is awesome.
It came from a couple of folks as I start to understand sort of what's going on in the Northwest a bit more, being out here a bit. And it's like, I know you're held in high regards by a few of your customers because they keep reaching out to me for sure.
Yeah, that is so awesome to hear.
Yeah, well, and well-deserved for sure. And
it is a great community.
Yeah.
We feel super fortunate to be a part of it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I wish you luck. And if the border or when the borders open up again here, I already have a little trip planned, you know, take the ferry down to Seattle and then start heading south and stuff. And I'm going to make sure I make a stop in Eugene and see you folks.
Okay. That would be so awesome.
Right on.
Let me know on the front end.
Oh, yeah.
If you're heading this way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And good luck with wedding season and all of that as well. Yeah. Awesome.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mark.
You bet.
Take care.
Holy Dinah. That was fun. Hey, really interesting talk with Toby, you know, and I know we talked an awful lot about COVID and the reactions to COVID, but that's kind of the world that we're in. Right. The pandemic has touched like every form of our business and that kind of thing. And so I'm glad we got to talk about that a bit. I'm thrilled to talk with someone that does wedding cakes and amazing wedding cakes. And I really thought the part where we were talking about how, you know, the weddings got smaller, but from her perspective as the baker, maybe the cakes were smaller, but she could spend more time and make them more elegant and that. And there was a little less crazy pressure in wedding season. It was good. Bit of a silver lining, you know, in all of the carnage over the last year. And just, I thought it was really cool how, you know, her and her husband had done the work in fine dining and okay, we're going to open up our own place and it's going to look like this. And they had to adjust a bit to fit what the community wanted, but they've got this platform now where they can just bring whatever cool ideas that they have to the people, right? You know, and so if he's making, you know, charcuterie and they're baking their own bread, plus they're doing the pastries and the little lunches and stuff, it's neat. They can really go in whatever direction that they want. And that's right there for me. That's the fun of having your own place, right? Is as you get interested in things, you can bring that along to the people that you serve, and you can introduce the people to what you're passionate about. That's a pretty cool thing. So I'm really grateful for the chat, and I'm grateful for Toby taking the time, because she was having the day, that's for sure. You know, there's a lot going on, but to take an hour to gab with this guy in Canada so that I can share it with all of you, I'm very grateful. So thanks, Toby. All right. I hope you enjoyed the show this week. I enjoyed bringing it to you. I always do. And I just want to put that offer out there. If you ever want to get in touch, you can reach out to me at via email, mark@riseuppod.com. I'm on Instagram. Yeah, I'm Mad Baker on Instagram. You can reach out to me there. Although I forget to check for messages on Instagram, but I do for every once in a while. But if you haven't heard from me for a week on Instagram, it's because I forget to press that little, oh, there is a message button. I don't see it. What can I say? And you can also head to riseuppod.com and listen to over 130 episodes of this podcast, which I'm still shaking my head about. That's pretty awesome. And if you really enjoy the show and you want to help keep it going, there's a little support the show button at riseuppod.com. You can click on that, you know, buy me a coffee, buy me a croissant, that kind of thing. Every donation adds up. That's how this show runs. It's fully supported by listeners just like you if you click the button. So head on over, riseuppod.com, and support the show. All right, until next week, have a great week. Bake lots. Enjoy summer if you're in the north. Enjoy winter if you're in the south. Bake lots. Work hard. Serve the people. Happy baking. Bye-bye.